Blog Talk Radio.
You really don't understand, do you? Hey, man, don't you realize in order for us to make this thing work, man, we've got to get rid of the pimps and the pushers and the nips all over again. You know, nobody's going to be any, okay? I mean, you, because nobody. I mean, you want to get rid of the pushers, I'll help you. Don't send your people after them. John, can you see that we can't get rid of one without getting rid of the other? We got to come down on most of them at the same time in order for the whole thing to work for people.
You know, nobody's calling me out of my business.
What's up, everybody? It's that time again, you know. I'm Citizen Payne, Eric Citizen Payne. This is Kay's son and friends. Yep, I'm Kay's son. My friends are, of course, Byron Saunders, legendary historian, Wayne Gilman, the legendary newsman. And that's Willie Hutch, you know, a little theme song or song we've been using for a minute from the Mac. The brother's going to work it out. And, yep, another day. This is Wednesday. This is a live one for us. News of the past week is interesting, to say the least. Devastating, if you really want to use the real words for it. Another mass shooting in Colorado, a mass shooting in Atlanta. The one thing that we should all walk away with is get rid of them guns, or at least get them out of the hands of the people who shouldn't have them. We've got some sort of gun control, the background checks. I don't know what the rush is for people to be able to get a gun real quick. Anybody selling a gun to somebody and they got a real quick, I ain't got time to, for no ground, no ID, you should be worried. You should. Your should tell you this person might be up to no good right here. And I don't see the reason why you can't wait a day or two for your firearm unless you got some nefarious purposes that you're engaging in. But that's just me, you know. I hear all these people talking about common sense, plain spoken, but, you know, the ones who always claim that never seem to be the ones that have it. That's the problem. Therein lies the rub, as Shakespeare likes to say. Friends, boys and girls, that's the problem. I'm going to bring the fellas in to talk about that. A couple other things I want to mention. Spring break in Miami, Florida during a pandemic. Can you blame the people that went down there, or do you blame the guy who says, we're 100% open, everybody come on down, when everybody else in the rest of the country is locked down in some way, shape, or form? What do you think is going to happen? Certainly when you say that to a bunch of young college kids during March Madness. But that's just me. See, I've got this problem with common sense, doggone it. And I know from up-close experience that it doesn't often happen in the world of politics. And all you got to do is look at Georgia and what they're trying to do. And you got to give them credit for their fantastic ways, creative ways, that they're leading the charge for voter suppression. Georgia, give them credit for how creative they can get and how tenacious they are. You know what I thought about earlier today when people watching the news and hearing these people talk about the riot, Capitol Hill riot, and trying to figure out, you know, the videotape of people spraying stuff onto the Capitol Hill police officer that ended up dying later, sprayed him with a chemical substance. And something flashed in my mind, you know, and they talk about this news, Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys teaming up, and everybody's surprised, at least on the news, surprised that these white supremacists are here, yada, yada. I'm not surprised. But the thing that really struck me is that the same thing, some of the same images and same things that people that looked like me were dealing with in my first decade of life, here some 40 years later, 50 years later maybe, I find myself looking at similar type of pictures that people of my ethnicity are dealing with. Interesting, isn't it? This is why centuries long, our struggle has been centuries long, because of the insidious nature of the enemy or those who would oppress us. They stop at nothing and they're going to keep coming day in and day out. And they put these little plans in place. And that's why the investigations into what happened on the 6th of January this year are so complicated, because there are obviously so many accomplices in the system, you know, embedded in various places, even the ones that were elected, embedded to continue the white supremacist system. Not everybody believes in it, but if you're white, you're taking part in it. And if you live in America, you're a part of it, regardless of whether you like it or not. I'm going to bring the fellas in. Here's Byron Saunders, legendary historian. What's up, Byron? How you doing, brother?
It's another blessed day down here in Washington, D.C., as springtime is popping up. And we'll appreciate the flowers blossoming. And, you know, there's most people now are getting their shots and their stimulus checks. So there is a sense of accomplishment in the first 60-some days of the new administration. And thus far, his word is golden. And that's really probably because he's speaking truth to power, as opposed to speaking power to power. Some men and women who have got access to power forget what power is really all about, Eric. So that's why we have shows like this, so we can discuss the virtue of power and how to use it, and those who are using it, hopefully for the good of mankind. As we wind down, you know what Sunday is? It's Palm Sunday. Season of Lent continuing.
Yeah.
I'll leave
it
there.
The unfortunate thing is that these people who claim to be so religious really are. I think they're the opposite of it. I think they worship a different type of God that whose trajectory is downward. Let's bring in Wayne real quick. You said something about the system, right? And Joe doing the right thing, because if we listen to some of the immigration reporting and the reports on some of the immigration, the situation that's happening at the border, you know, people are kind of like, what are you going to do? What's the administration going to do? What's their policy? Whoop, whoop. Are they working fast enough? Are the kids? Whoop. Tape came out, film came out. This is what I'm talking about. And you kind of touched on the subject a little bit. You know, these things take time, and people are saying, you know, I mean, it's just, you want people to understand, yeah, hold them accountable, but damn, it's like, if I'm one of the people that's working in this administration, I'm like, yeah, dude, I'm still trying to learn where the men's room is, you know? I mean, it's not that simplistic, but it is. So, you know, when you have, and I think sometimes the media is pressed 24 hours, we want to know what the progress is, and you just asked us that yesterday. Let us deal with the problem. And to expect miracles immediately, it kind of is, it doesn't serve what's trying to be accomplished. And anybody that has a clear head and a reasonable head should at least understand, well, you know, here's how much time was spent neglecting this problem. Here's how much time has been spent trying to rectify that. So let's do the mathematics. Let's bring in Wayne real quick. I know he has a comment. Want to say, Wayne, how you doing?
All right. I'm just taken back by all the criticism on the part of the Republicans to, you know, condemn Joe Biden's efforts at the border already. You know, this problem is largely a problem that they passed on to us. And they're going to turn around and say, well, we got it from Obama. You know, I mean, there has been a problem with respect to people wanting to cross the border to flee the insurrections that go on in their respective countries. And instead of, and I'm not saying, I shouldn't even say instead, previous administrations, the Obama administrations, and I'd like to think, you know, again, I don't recall, you know, George W. Bush making that a priority. But the issue has been there, and instead of dealing, a lot of these people don't want to leave their homelands, but until they come up with some sort of, you know, definitive plan to prop up the economies of these countries so people could work and feel like as if they could go home and take care of their families and deal with the issues of corruption. I mean, just to make these governments whole, you know, it would stop the problem, a crisis at the border. But the problem is that you have Republicans, you know, they're a minority now, but they're you know, reeking of power within that minority class. And they will stop at nothing to just basically change the narrative on what is going on when reality is there. I mean, they're condemning Biden on the issue of immigration. The vaccines are not being moved out fast enough. You know, you mentioned a moment ago Florida and the situation down there with Easter break and all that. And, you know, a lot of the people who are out there partying, having a good time, and I was once their ages, you know, I understand what it's like to let loose and, you know, but we're living in very critical times. We cannot afford to engage in foolishness because it's dangerous. And I'd like to think that some of the people, and I noticed that the networks spent a lot of time covering black folks partying in Miami like as if we were the only ones out there doing this thing. And largely, the administration I've forgotten the governor's name, but DeSantis, you know, has been espousing this from the time Trump was still in office. There is no pandemic in his mindset. He was amongst the last to put on a mask or even go along with the protocol of what the CDC wants. You know, it's this kind of insanity that I don't quite understand what the Republican Party is about now. I mean, there's only but a handful, and I mean, I could count on one palm, maybe five people in Congress, both sides, that are worthy and understanding of what's going on.
I don't think we should be I understand what they're about. As far as Florida goes, just to comment on that, like I was saying earlier, you know, when you get a governor that says we're 100% open, you know, and everybody comes down here and all of the other states around you aren't, of course everybody's going to flock to that state. And I heard it was more adults than it was kids. So, you know, I don't think, yeah, clearly it wasn't just spring breakers. It was everybody that heard that Florida was now open. They already talked about on the news people making plans to go down there for Easter and things like that. So it was already an obvious thing. So it the kids are going to do kind of what the adults do to a certain degree on top of, you know, teenagers doing their own thing. But kind of they get some of their cues from the adults. And certainly doesn't help to have a governor that's totally against any type of pandemic precautions that anybody might want to take, you know. It's totally ridiculous from where I'm coming from where anybody's coming from, any type of reasonableness. But he's a Republican, and you were talking about the Republicans, you know, criticizing Biden, and that's what they're going to do. They're in a minority, and they are going to criticize everything, obviously. They didn't vote for any of this, the stimulus or the COVID relief bill that just came out. None of them voted for it. So none of them are for this voter this change in the voting and addressing voter suppression and the voter ID laws. They want to hold that. I believe that they're trying to position themselves to be a minority that rules through the majority, but a minority party. I think that what they're trying to do, and some of the white supremacists in their party, is trying to position themselves for United States, if they have their way, to be like what South Africa was, and an apartheid-type system with a minority ruling over the majority. And if you look at some of the moves that some of them are trying to make and have been trying to put in place, of course they see the browning of America. And reluctantly, probably a lot of them are reluctant to allow that to happen within their party. Clearly there's a certain purity that they're trying to maintain. Obviously, some of them are white supremacy. Maybe others not so much, just Republican mentality. But they're trying to position themselves to be a minority ruling a majority. If you look at the fact that what's the dude, the Spanish guy that was running the Proud Boys, Tario Enrico, whatever his name is, he was head of the Latinos for Trump. I heard on the news today. So, you know, there's this minority kind of people are trying to align themselves with a conservative ruling class minority and also a white supremacist minority coalition, it seems, and then try to maintain power that way, because certainly their actions don't suggest they really have their arms open to any other, truly open to minorities.
I agree. I think it's about divide and conquer, you know, and it's not just, you know, Latinos. They're like one of two who look like us who are in the woodshed trying to do the, you know, the enemy's work, as far as I'm concerned, and it's not taking us anywhere. You know, it's not improving relations, you know, as far as this country is concerned. And I find it, you know, really despicable when you stop and think of people of color who support that agenda, knowing full well anybody studying this country's history could see that this is not something that would work largely in the interest of everyone. You know, I find it appalling what they've done, you know, with the Asian community since Trump came out with his, you know, tropes last year, just basically, you know, cultivating the environment that we're in now. And then we have this issue in Colorado the other day, whether the guy was sick or not. You know, why is it that we haven't done anything to get the guns off the street? Why is it that we just, you know, seem to march in time whenever a crisis comes and we're ready to sit down and pray and have a vigil over those who have been lost and all that business? And yet nothing ever seems to get – that's the frustration. But I still want to believe, in spite of all that, that, you know, the tables will eventually turn favorably. You know, I don't know how many more must die so others may live, you know, but it's really unfortunate and unfathomable at the same time.
Well, one thing is certain that is happening, whether with or without the push from above, beyond, or below, or in between. Race is a paramount issue in this country. This democracy will not survive. It will fail if it does not rid itself of white supremacy, hatred, racism, and bigotry. That's a guarantee. And we're seeing it come to bear, because right now Asians and African Americans and Native Indians and Asian Indians have a very good reason why we should coalesce and come together as a coalition against hatred, racism, bigotry, and white supremacy.
Without happening. Question.
I wanted to say about the immigration issue. You know, you had mentioned earlier a little while ago, Wayne, about we got hit with these other countries where a lot of these people are fleeing from. It really is, you know, it really has struck me a hemispheric problem, right? If we don't help the nations in their efforts of stability for their citizens, you know, it kind of clearly it spilled over. Now, I don't know why I decided to stage the preferred country to come to, but people coming, walking from Guatemala or wherever they're coming from, clearly the walk through Mexico continuing to feed on to the United States, you know. It's just something to consider. I don't know the path. Obviously, if somebody's going to walk however many thousands of miles that is, they're not either they're in very desperate situations. I said that before. Either they're running from something, running to something, you know, trying to get away from somebody, trying to get to somebody they love. And, you know, people aren't going to make that trek. Just consider it lightly.
You know, that's not like a easy thing to consider, you know, a light jaunt to try and let me see if I could sneak into the United States, you know, not to mention all the stuff you'd have to deal with once you got here. I mean, you know, asylum, withstanding asylum and all that. But still, considering the trek, it is something that people, you know, really have got to want to do. So, you know, I mean, I don't think that the people on the Republican side are the only ones in the country that are worried about immigration, and seeing some of the things that are being reported are concerned and really are curious as to why these surges are happening, right? And I think that's the thing that the Democrats need to get out in front of and to kind of explain that. Once again, I'm always saying about the Democrats getting out and making their case, putting things in context, because we always allow the Republicans to get out there and tell the story or tell the lie and allow them to let that lie sink in, and people who don't know any better or don't want to know any better or don't have the resources to know any better end up believing that lie. And this is something that always seems to happen with the Democrats, you know, and like I've said before, I wonder if everybody that claims to be on our team is on our team, you know, and I start looking down the bench to Joe Manchin, and an old girl from Arizona. And I'm wondering, is everybody on the same side on this side of the field? You know what I'm saying, Byron?
Well, you know, let's be honest. We don't expect the Republicans to do anything other than what they're doing right now, because they're not a party of conscience. They are a cult.
Yeah.
They are zombies. Okay? and let's also not get it twisted. Every one of those members who participated in the insurrection were not fans of the Democratic Party. So let's call them what they are and who they really are. They're Republicans. They're Republican insurrectionists, and they're Republican voters, 74 million people who participated in a unabetted, aided, they wanted it, they continue to speak on it in social media. Those 74 million people are the same people who climbed the fence, who broke into the Capitol. And the fact that you are saying nothing about it is complicit in the crime of sedition. You're traitors. And if we're going to root this system out, now is the time to root it out of all of its cancers. Because the cancer that we have right now, I keep saying this every time we get this gun issue, I'll say it again, there are 350 million Americans in this country. Yesterday I heard the report that there are over 400 million guns in this nation. I don't own one.
Right.
That means somebody else has more than what I own and who feel as if they have to intimidate everything in their path. And this is the crime that's going to kill America. You cannot arm yourself to the teeth and then expect everyone to come to the table out of fear, because you're intimidating using bully tactics. And of the 400 million weapons in this nation, you know, this fact is more alarming than anything else. Over 50% of those 400 million weapons in this country are owned by 3% of the population.
Hmm.
So who are they pointing the weapons at, guys?
Over 50%.
That's not a test question. Who are they pointing their guns at?
Hmm.
People of color.
Well, and my only argument with that is, what about those who look like us and pointed at us? You know,
mm-hmm.
I understand clearly what you're saying, and it's getting to the point where it's really frustrating, because, you know, I grew up in an era, and in a way I was raised that, you know, I was told never to even consider engaging in that kind of activity. But I tell you, within the last 4 years, and I'd say within the last two of the 4 years, there's been so much chaos in the urban communities, even in the burbs. You know, I mean, look what happened in Colorado, Boulder, the last place that you would expect anything like that happening, you know?
And
the pandemic hasn't made it easy. And I know we have a right to bear arms, but, you know, I grapple with this every day as I see a lot of my friends my age going out there getting strapped.
Right.
So, Wayne, why would you say you would think Boulder would be the last place? If over 50% of the 400 million weapons are owned by 3% of the population, it should tell you by statistics alone, those populations who own most of the guns are not us.
Well, no, okay. That I understand. When I'm looking at Boulder, I'm looking at the socioeconomic, you know, climate there. I'm looking at the level of intelligence. Some of the brightest white Americans, if you will, if there are a few left, reside in areas like Boulder. You know, it's not even a racial component. Is that, you know, I'm talking about the municipality itself. I'm not talking about what surrounds it. You know, Boulder is like Mayberry. I mean, that's a poor analogy. But I'm just saying Boulder. Boulder is a place where you have a level of intelligence there. There seems to be very little tolerance for discrimination. And people, you know, the young brother who's a litigator and a member of the Senate, Nagoose, he represents the very district where that came from, you know, where that incident occurred. And, you know, it's that caliber of individual that resides. I'm not saying he is in the majority, but I'm talking about the fabric, when you juxtapose that with other parts of the country, you know, when you juxtapose
That's just it. It's in a part of the country that's gun culture. That's gun culture part of the country. So
yeah.
all you're saying is great. Well, they believe in gun culture, though, in that part of the country. I think that's Byron's point. And I agree with it. I mean, I understand.
Well, I can find gold country right around the corner from here, brother. You know, I mean, the deal is that two wrongs don't make it right.
Can you find you say you can find gun culture right around here. So you can find an open market where you can go and buy them. Is that what you're saying?
That's been my argument all along. I mean, every time we've done shows like this, you know, there should be some uniformity in the law.
Right. Of course, we all agree with that. But there's a difference between that part of the country. You got to understand. Everybody understands gun culture. Colorado had the most mass shootings in the country. And the guy wasn't a white guy. I want to apologize to all the white guys that I automatically profiled you and thought that you did it because apparently it was a guy of Syrian descent, but he had been here since he'd been 3 years old. So that's what I'm saying. He was an American. He's American. American brought up in Colorado in a gun culture society, who experienced racism, being picked on and bullied, and he reacted much in the same way that Dylan, whatever his name was back in the day, did Columbine and those individuals. They were bullied too. He reacted. I'm going to bring former Assemblyman William Payne, my dad, and he wants to join the discussion about this particular issue. And before, we're going to also get into the voting rights that are trying to be suppressed, particularly in Georgia. But, Dad, you wanted to make a comment about this type of situation?
I just want to say good evening to you gentlemen.
Good evening, Dr. Payne.
And I'm listening because obviously we need to come up with a solution to this problem that we have that repeats itself over and over again, the gun, the killings, no matter what. The interesting thing about it is that people who have been victims of these shootings, go from 5 and 6 year old kindergartners in a classroom, or goes to the church of middle aged African Americans in a church situation. They're gone praying, and it goes now with this in a grocery store out in Colorado, et cetera, and then or a movie. If you want to go to a movie in Colorado, that's kind of dangerous as well. The complexity of this situation is just so deep, so amazing that there has not been a sufficient amount of people in this country who say enough is enough. This is foolishness that they go back to the Second Amendment when the British was here, you know, they had a right to bear arms. well, you had a right to bear arms against the British, but they were here. They were occupying our country. That's when that came about, that they should be able to have weapons to protect themselves from, you know, way back then. Now, the people foolishly carry that all the way to this year, saying, well, that's in the Constitution. It's a complex situation, for crying out loud. Eric mentions that this fellow in Colorado was born elsewhere, but he came here. He's been here from another culture, but he was raised here, I suppose, and becomes a great American. The first thing he does, he's old enough, I suppose, is to go to get a weapon, and because it's legal, and it's a situation that I don't know what the answer is. I don't know whether anybody knows what the answer is. Obviously, we don't. The fact that these people use this foolish argument about this is a Second Amendment right, and that they carry their weapons wherever they go, including into a supermarket, I suppose you can carry it. It's an open carry place. I frankly don't know what the answer is. And yes, we say that, can you get guns wherever you are? Apparently so. Apparently in the city of in Brooklyn or Newark or wherever, you can, in fact, if you want one, you get guns, because they, you know, even though it's illegal, obviously there's a way to get them. There's nothing that stops them. You can go to the gun shows, and where in states where they're required to have, show your credentials, et cetera, that you can go to a dealer who is legitimate and go to the next one who has a booth set up, and can buy weapons from without showing anything at the same kind of show. So there's nobody that's really enforcing the law. I mean, guns are everywhere. Apparently, I guess if somebody said that you can't get them. Of course, they're available everywhere. Even though New Jersey is not a state that's open to guns. Obviously, you can get them everywhere. And so, I don't know what the answer is right now. I just don't know what it is.
I believe, Wayne, the gun culture that is prevalent in the Midwest and the South is a culture that is celebrated like almost like a rite of passage. You know, like it's interesting you mentioned that. Like, you probably got a gun. If the dude lived out there, that's probably they do hunting. It's almost like a rite of passage. But I agree with you, Wayne. There is a gun culture in the inner cities, and it's a negative kind of gun culture, negative connotation, and negatively looked at. Not as a rite of passage, maybe as a rite of passage amongst young brothers or young people who kind of might be going down a different path, or not the most positive path.
Yeah.
Certainly not the path that the Midwest and the South, not the path that they present like their gun culture, right? Like, this is, you're an American, this is your right, and let me give you your little rifle, son, at 13, and teach you how to shoot it. You know, that's so innocent, and so it seems so natural and innocent and righteous,
yeah,
as opposed to the reflection of the gun culture in the inner city and people that are the less advantage in society. You're going to say that?
Well, you mentioned rite of passage. In places in Pennsylvania or up in New England and other places like that, where people go hunting, they use these, at 12 years old, 13 years old, the kid gets a shotgun or whatever they use, and so they have guns up there for hunting.
Right.
Unfortunately, what's happened is that in parts of the country, people get them to show that this is their rite of passage, and they have their weapon. But that's the idea. But none of those states that allow you to buy a weapon, I don't think that they, well, if they do, they should not permit the machine guns. They should not submit permits for the kinds of guns that are being used, on the battlefield, et cetera. And I think that's one of the first things that has to happen, is that have to enforce the use of the type of weapons. You know, there's actually no need anywhere in this country a need for those automatic weapons that are being used now to spray people down. So
exactly,
you need a machine gun like that. The weapon the guy used to kill these people the other day. Kill them. I mean, it's not to wound something. I mean, that's to destroy a person, to go through a person, et cetera, et cetera. And the fact that they're able to buy those things, those asinine legislators in those states that permit that to happen. In that town, they overrode the city, you know, the city's rule that no open carry, whatever. The judge said, well, no, they can do that now. We're going to look at that again. Well,
one of the fallacies that we have to deal with in this nation is that you have to have you arm yourself. Here's a bigger issue than just the guns in the street. If the United States is the world's largest facilitator of making and selling as arms merchants, this country sells more arms and merchandise to the world than any other country existence. 65% of every dollar goes to building arms and weapons of mass destruction. Our defense budget is usurping all of our infrastructure money. No wonder we can't fix the street. No wonder we don't have enough doctors to supply giving a shot, because we got military money using and wasting everything that we need in this country. Now, this is a fact. We know that when Obama suggested reducing the size of the budget, the Republicans went all in on him. Why? Mm-hmm. Because he was talking about restricting the funds and the contracts to these southern states that build the armament, that build the guns, and get back into our streets. We have a glut of weapons. And you want to stop the black-on-black crime? Well, my goodness, this guy who was out in Colorado does not live in a black community. He got that gun the day before? The day before?
Yeah. Yeah. With
come
no
on,
scrutiny,
guys.
Nothing.
We're talking about common sense.
Exactly.
So we
the
have
owner,
to,
I mean,
we
the
have
store
to
owner
do.
Didn't even question what his motives
that's
were.
That's right. We have
or,
got
you
to
know.
Reduce the amount of guns in our country. And, yes, it's going to engage some very serious questions about the Second Amendment. But if our – and here's where it gets even more twisted. If our infrastructure and the Second Amendment provides for an armed militia, where was our armed militia on January the 6th?
Hmm.
Let's just connect all of these dots.
Which armed militia would that be? We didn't have no armed militia. We need to have an armed militia. Call it the Christmas
well,
Addict.
I was just going to go there. There's been an emergence of a black armed militia. What's your take on that?
Well, you know what? Why not? You're opening the door for more people to arm themselves.
Exactly.
Why not?
And that
so,
goes
so
back to my point.
You want Armageddon
when I
or do you
with.
Want peace? Which one do you really want?
Hey,
we have some folks in the black community that say, well, if people are going to arm themselves, you know, within the law, then we're going to do the same thing and have begun doing that, as you saw it. And as a matter of fact, a couple hundred of them marched and disrupted or put a stop to a demonstration that was about to begin in the southern city, and they're well organized, et cetera. I guess there's some that say, well, you know, enough is enough, and we're going to have to do that. And I saw, I guess we all saw the TV program the other day. I don't know where it was, on one of these shows, 60 Minutes maybe, where they showed the, you know, where they do the training, et cetera, and that they're organized and they're organizing, you know, military, and that they're operating under the same laws, they're the same, they got their weapons the same way the other so-called legitimate organizations do too, and I think they got to have some people a little concerned, and they're going after the leader of it, every way they can. But I just don't know what the answer is. It's a long term solution, and if we haven't been able to solve it now, and we get people in office now, for instance, the Democrats who have some common sense, and to replace that fool that was there, who encouraged these folks to come out armed, et cetera, et cetera. Now we have a president that's going the opposite, but he has senators, Democrats, who are being supported by the NRA, number one, and they're in saying that they're not going to take the guns away from their people. And is it, Manchin, what is he from, West Virginia? Where's the fool?
West Virginia.
Yeah, sure. So he's he's not going to take away the guns from his folks at all. So I don't know where it'll end. It's only a few stone crazy.
In a Trump environment. That's the problem. I had asked the congressman a couple of weeks ago about, he should be, as far as I'm concerned, expelled. There should be some expulsion of him from the Democratic Party, because he's always on the edge. It's like he doesn't know how to make up his mind or where to go.
Apparently, that's what I want. Let's move on from this. I want to talk, before we got about 18 minutes, I want to talk about this, all of these attempts at voter suppression in all of these states, about 250 some odd bills in about 43 state legislatures. The most creative and prolific seems to be Georgia. And Dad, since you served in a state legislature before, can you give us a little sampling, or give people an idea of how that works, that environment works, how all of these laws can continue to come up that seem to want to roll back other laws that have already been established?
Oh, yeah, they haven't gotten rid of the folks that want to keep the vote from blacks. I mean, it took a long enough time. Yeah. To get it, people finally got to vote. If they could tell how many marbles were in a bowl of, pass the test and all that kind of foolishness. So, if people gave their lives to finally be able to register and to vote, and now you have these people coming out of the woods again doing the same thing they did before. I think that the young lady down there in Georgia who almost got elected governor has Stacey got, shook up a whole bunch of people and has organized very well. So I guess they said, well, we're going to have to get serious about it, because if she was able to do what she did and others also organizing, then they're going after it to try to keep that vote away. And right back to the days, the Jim Crow days, when they would not allow, blacks to vote, period, et cetera. I mean, I don't know what on earth we need to do. It's clear, very clear, in this country that there are, 70 million people voted for that fool to be president. So there's an awful lot of folks out here that are just stone, some dyed-in-the-wool racist, and they're going to do everything they possibly can. I don't know. More people have to die? I don't know. I don't know. It took a lot of people died during that civil rights fight and whatnot. I don't know. I don't have the answer. I'm working on it, though. I'm working on it where I'm at, where I'm
right.
But it's spread. The racism and everything else, now with the Asians and all that kind of stuff. I mean, there's so much damn hate in the place. I don't know where it comes from, the water or what the hell. Last thing I'll say is that this whole experiment of taking a country, taking this place, coming here, and then saying that we are going to build a country made up of every different kind of folk you can imagine. And we're going to put them all together, everybody's going to come out of the water and they're all going to think the same and everything else. This country is the most diverse country ever. I mean, from all kinds of backgrounds, and so a lot of people brought the hate, obviously, with them. When the blacks were brought over here, and 400 years ago, they were doing something then that, enslavement of people was commonplace, and even in Europe and other places like that. They had to indentured servants, and they had others also. So this and you know, the Romans and whatnot, people were enslaved, et cetera, et cetera. So what had happened when they came here, you know, they brought folks, and I guess it wasn't a big deal. They, you know, sure, some people are going to work, you know, for 150 years and we'll let them free or whatever. But the fact that different nationalities came here and they said we're all going to be the same except for blacks, of course, was kind of strange that they would, you know, ever thought that was going to happen. And I guess somebody had to be on the bottom, and they have the, you know, they put the black people on the bottom. So it's an experiment. What did they say? The melting pot? That's right, the melting pot. The melting pot. Everybody's going to be put in one big pot and be stirred together. They're all going to come out thinking the same and being the same, et cetera. Of course, it doesn't work. And so we have 400 years of this fight going on, and you know. I can't give up on it because we're here. We're here. I mean, this is where we are. But, you know, I saw a program today where so many people down in Argentina, Africans, down in Brazil, Africans, et cetera, were taken down there as well.
Brazil is another type of place. Dad, I'm going to let you jump off. Before you go, you said that the melting pot analogy. I make kind of reminds me of every day I make a smoothie, guys, and put a lot of different fruits and stuff in. And usually the darker fruit is the dominant one that puts the color in. So maybe some of the people that looked at that melting pot saw how their stew was turning when they put some of them really dark berries or dark vegetables in and thought it was getting a little bit too dark. In the melting pot, they wanted to pick out certain fruits. But Dad, I'm gonna let you go. We're gonna jump off. And
One last thing. When I was a member of the state assembly here, a lot of my colleagues went to visit Ellis Island, and a lot of their people had come from places had come through Statue of Liberty, had come through that island, and so they wanted to put some state money together so they could help rebuild the place up, et cetera. And I told them they're out of their minds. Because my people didn't come. My people came here in chains, and the people that they were talking about 10 million folks came through to Ellis Island, about 10 million, and about 100,000 blacks, maybe from Jamaica and places like that, came here. And I said, I'm not going to vote for spending money to improve this place where your people came through, were welcome here, and the only folks that came through this way were only about 0.1% of people. I said, so I said, no, we're not going to use my money to fix up this place because they didn't even allow our folks to come that way. But anyway, right. We're still working on the melting pot. So that's it. Thanks for talking to me. Right.
All right, thanks, Dad. Thanks for offering your views on it. All thanks right. a lot. Fellas, all
right.
just bring that up, bring all that forward to where we are today and back to the original thing of voter suppression. And where we are with that, certainly a place like D.C., right, Byron, where they don't even want you guys to become a state. Okay.
It is amazing.
Yeah. And and to me, that the fact that they keep trying over and over again, like my father said, apparently there's some people that seem to want to continue this voter suppression and seem to want to continue the oppression of African Americans for whatever reason, but they keep trying, Wayne, no matter how many times, you know, we try to defeat it or try to work together, you know, it's people that just want to reign supreme over.
Yeah. And the thing is, I mean, I understand, you know, in the spirit of which your father conveyed his feelings, because I think all of us are fed up, especially those of his generation. I'm right behind him. You know, thinking that we did something to change things for the better, and they just seem to be getting progressively worse. You know, there's been enough studies done to show where racism in this country kills the economy, and we are a very wealthy environment here in this country. There's no reason why we should have this in our way with all the other problems that we're facing. You know, if we could just settle this problem, maybe the quality of life would improve for everybody. But again, it's the way the information is fed. Then you have people out there who are sick. You know, I understand the frustration of that Syrian person who went off yesterday in Colorado, but he was not well. You know, I mean, there are just a myriad of problems that need to be tackled one by one. I hope the Democrats could do something in the next 4 years to show that there's some structure, that they could bring about change in spite of what goes on. I just saw Joy Reid with Eric Holder about an hour ago on the tube, and he was talking about that, you know, legislation that was withered away because of the voting rights bill, you know, being eaten away by the Republicans, and what they need to do now just to bring things back, you know, there's still enough bite in that game to bring it forward to just get rid of this problem. But the Democrats have a lot on their hands, and I wish we could replicate a Stacey Abrams in every state in this country, you know, because that's what it's going to take to just change things.
Yeah.
Well, also know that with the voter suppression, it's also about not giving Washington, D.C., it's
yeah.
51st state, Puerto Rico, 52nd state, or St. Thomas, Virgin Islands, 53rd state. Why? Because they're people of color here.
Color.
They want to maintain their plantation concept. That's what it's all about. Don't get nothing else twisted about the voter suppression, because it's ultimately we pay more taxes in Washington, D.C. than they do per person in some of those western states like Montana. Come on.
Yeah.
So we're talking about the very, very essence of bigotry, hatred, and white supremacy existing right in our nation's capital, and the refusal to give the people of D.C. statehood. They want to. This patriarchal concept of we're going to be your father, we're going to be your mother. We don't need another mother. We don't need another father. What we want is to get your damn heel off of our necks.
You know,
and if you're going to have democracy
and equality, then
you're going to have to start with your nation's capital, because that symbol alone is what's keeping America from being the democracy that it wishes and dreams that it always wants to be.
I was just going to say that, you know, it's so embarrassing when you have countries, you know, like that, and leaders like Vladimir Putin criticizing the United States after we condemn human rights violations in these other countries, and they point to the inconsistencies about our democracy, and they point to things like that, like what you just mentioned, Byron. And I just think that's the problem. We project a double standard. That's why we're not understood.
Yeah. Well, I think, to me,
you got the gun issue. You compound the issue with the gun issue. And like I said, where was our militia on January the 6th? They failed us.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because these were not people of color. If these had been people of color, you and I know it would have and could have been the most worst massacre other than Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma, other than in Florida, other than other places where we know, Wilmington, North Carolina, where whites armed themselves and destroyed our democracy.
Mm.
Now, I don't have to keep giving chapter, verse of history. It's all there. And you want to know why the same mistakes are being made? It's because we have yet to confront the real issue of putting to rest once and for all. Is America going to be the hallmark of democracy where the playing field is equal? Or are we just going to cherry pick those who deserve what we may consider to have full citizenship? I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired.
It's got to change.
You've seen this merry-go-round.
Yeah,
this merry-go-round. I'll be 71 years old in 2 days, and I've seen this merry-go-round far too long.
I hear that. Congrats.
That's perfect, brother. You know, to me, it's about the power, you know. It's a pimp game, you know. You give people something to believe in, something to attain to, something to pledge allegiance to, and then individuals in certain key positions, they do whatever they want to do, you know. And the United States has got enough people to buy into the concept of the notion of democracy
you know, and you get enough people to buy into it, and you even get people that become leaders of the of this society that buy into it too, that really believe in it. But trust and believe, there's enough individuals and there's enough ways and gray areas and fall between the crack areas where people can pimp the system. And so where the right individuals can find the pimp system, it behooves everybody that understands the system to keep it going, right? Kind of like the stock market, right? Everybody, you know, let's keep this system going because this is the best shell game happening. And when you really understand that system and you're really a player running the game, you know, the game works out, right? The house always wins. That's why the house, that's why Vegas and Atlantic City and those places are open 24 hours a day, bro. That's why you got all these different online gambling sites and all that 24/7. You know, house always wins.
Right.
That's what you
money to be made.
In a country like, you know, dealing with this in a country like this one, when money buys power, and that power has been aligned in some sort of ethnic tribalism. Certainly,
mm-hmm.
That's the way it was built. And that's not only the way it was built here in this country. If we know, if we look at all over the world, everywhere certain individuals have traveled, the indigenous people of the land have suffered in some way, shape, or form, or certainly have come out on the short end of the stick, even if they went into some sort of partnership with these individuals. I'm just going by what I see. And like I've been saying, this my theme for this show has been the common sense. I'm just commenting on common sense. We got like 3 minutes to go, guys. I just want to talk about, I happened to be online, you know, looking at some stuff, checking some stories from last week that we could talk about. And since we've been more focusing on or bringing to people pop culture and art and stuff like that, and since, you know, we like to talk about movies and TV and art and stuff like that, I got to give a shout-out and say rest in peace to George Segal, actor George Segal. Because he was one of my first actors I used to see on the regular, you know. Wayne remembers, and Byron, if you were living here at that time, back in the day, New Jersey area had the 4:30 movie. It used to come on Channel 7. And every day coming from home to school, for us that were in junior high and grade school at the time, you know, we would catch a lot of these movies, and George Segal was in a number of those movies. And he was always an enjoyable actor, always a favorite for me, and just had a real likable presence and character. And one of the guys from the 60s and 70s, and I guess he's nostalgic for me because he reminds me of my childhood. You were going to say, Byron?
I was just going to say that, yeah, a brilliant talent that has transitioned on and left behind a legacy and a lore of work that is really what to be honored and respected. He was one of my – I enjoy watching him work. You know,
right.
You like to see some actors who says, come on and just burn up. I mean, they just give it.
Likeable people. He was nominated for an Oscar.
Yeah.
Nominated for an Oscar. Credits range from Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, as we got 90 seconds.
Yeah.
Where's Papa, Just Shoot Me. Most recently, he was still working. He was 82
and
he's working on the show The Goldbergs, which is currently a sitcom, and they're going to do a tribute to him. So rest in peace. That's one of the people that kind of piqued my interest in movies and watching a lot of movies and stuff like that. And he, like we said, he was an enjoyable. He was a likable personality, and that's what they say a lot sometimes in the business, the people with likable personality.
Well, coming on to piggyback of that, we lost Elgin Baylor a couple of days ago.
Oh, yeah.
Great talent, equal stature, and humble, class act.
Yep.
Sad to see these greats go.
Absolutely.
87 as well.
I forgot to say that. Yeah, I used to see Elgin Baylor. I used to go to the Clippers games with Kadeem and Daryl. They had season tickets, and I didn't know who Elgin Baylor was at first, but then I realized who he was, and used to always see him there, and that he was a bad boy. But we got 20 seconds. Guys, you want to say goodbye? We've got 20 seconds. Wayne, you want to give the people your send-off there?
Hey, man, keep hope alive. You know, depressing out here, but we got to keep hope alive.
There it is. All right. Talk to you later. Brother. Byron, you want to say goodbye to the people as we sign off here?
Absolutely. Peace and love always. And remember, the power is in your vote. We are the majority.
There it is. Byron, Wayne,
the legendary historian, legendary newsman. This has been Kay's Son and Friends. Thanks to my dad for calling in and giving his perspective as well. Join us again. We're going to do another one real soon, another episode coming to you. All right? Kay's Son and Friends, my mom and my sister and my family, they're up there having a good time. Peace. I'm Citizen Payne.
But don't send your people after me. John?